You're listening to the AHDB podcast, practical know-how for a successful agricultural future. Hello and welcome to this week's slightly different AHDB podcast. In this episode, you will hear guest farmer Martin Williams become the interviewer as he speaks to AHDB's market intelligence analyst Peter Collier about life at the AHDB, his thoughts on the UK market and the future of exports in the European market and beyond. Please enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side.
So, Peter, how did you come to start at the AHDB? What's your story?
Well, I've now been at the AHDB for coming up to 2 years now. At school, my interests were the sciences, so biology, chemistry, maths, physics. But I wasn't particularly engaged with that. Sport was my main life, so I went into the equine world and I was eventing for 5 years, either buying and selling or competing around events up and down the country and internationally, which was good for a few years, and you know, it's part of my blood. I like being outside. I'm a fen boy at heart, really. So working outside was perfect for 5 years. But yeah. Then I needed a career and a bit of a change, so ended up redoing my A-levels at Cambridge and then went to Exeter, where I did my undergrad in biology and genetics. Spent the summer trying to find jobs, realised I didn't actually want to work in a lab at all. So went back to Exeter and did a master's in agricultural economics, which was good fun. Did a bit of work for the Exmoor Society while I was there, assessing economics of hillside farming and viable alternatives. And then ended up applying for jobs at the AHDB, which were kind enough to make me an offer, which is where I've been ever since, in the market department, which has been really good fun.
It's a vibrant business, the AHDB. Spoke there, it's really lively and lovely.
Yeah, it's really lively, and the people really make it.
Yeah, they do, and it's a fantastic group of people. So how do you feel that AHDB itself has changed since you've been there, if at all?
I think AHDB as a whole is evolving. We're still working on how we're coming together. So from being separate sectors, we're trying to be this one AHDB, trying to bring everyone together. We're now in the same office, trying to do a bit more working collaboratively, talking to different teams. And it's something we're learning and getting better at, and it's something which is going to continue and move forwards. Personally, within our team, within the markets team, we're finding our voice more, which is nice. We're being more individuals. We're getting out and about, which is why I've come out today again. We're allowed to have our own personal views now, which is good. It means, I hope, that we're more trusted in the industry, or at least you can pick up the phone and speak to us. We are people. We're not an organisation.
Yeah.
So I think we are changing. I think we're growing and developing as a team and who we are, which is a great change.
What do you enjoy about your role the best? What's the best and the worst?
The best and the worst. Ooh. The best is getting out, questioning people. We're not here to tell anyone what to do. I view our role and my role is to question people as to what they're doing and offer my own thoughts, advice and ask the right questions. I was at a seed trial event the other week where people were talking about oats and how much oats they were going to plant, whether they liked growing them. And it was just posing that question of to where are you going to sell them, what's your market, and just posing those other questions other than just the economics, which I really enjoy, getting people to engage and think hard about all aspects of a business.
Yeah.
That's the enjoyable part. I like getting out, doing presentations, seeing people, talking to people on the phone, putting your own views across. It's a really lucky job to be in.
In the current climate then, we're living in very volatile times with all the, well, I won't mention the B word, but all those different things that are happening around the world. Mm. We seem to live on crises for a market very often, crises in currency. We need a crisis somewhere or a currency spike somewhere to make our job good, in cereals anyway. How far ahead do you think you can plan market intelligence based on the current climate?
Well, what we have to do is to separate how we view markets as to whether we look at the fundamentals or whether we look at more political drivers. The fundamentals you can plan a lot further ahead. The fundamentals for like next season we can plan a lot better. We can look further ahead of that. We can look at planting intentions. You can look at where the incentives were for planting. You can look at likely yields. You can look at supply and demand. And that formulates our long-term view as to how that is. short-term drivers will be like currency fluctuation, will be more political drivers, which fluctuate markets. You can view them as a long-term trend, which is where our long-term view needs to be. But within that long-term trend, there's going to be volatility within it, which both are important and take advantage of any price spikes in terms of farmer or any price lows in terms of consumer. We need talking about, we need discussing, and it's separating that and being consistent, which is the challenge that we have, is to have that long-term view without getting sidetracked into short-term volatility. But
there was a chap who spoke a while ago, I went to watch him, and he suggested that the past 25-year average wheat price hovered around the £110 a tonne mark, because that's where it levelled out at. Do you see that lifting, bearing in mind the cost of production is about £128 a tonne now?
I think the costs have gone up. I think it's quite easy to overlook inflation. I'd say, I think the average is more like 140 now if you look over a shorter time period.
Yeah.
We do risk in agriculture looking at everything on the long term without accounting for this inflation changes.
Yeah.
Which can be quite a dangerous thing to do in terms of your business security, where we do need to look at the value of a pound and see how that's changed over time.
Yeah.
We always take for granted in cereals that it's always a pound a month, carry from month to month. And it's been like that for years.
Yeah,
it has. And should it be like that?
Yeah.
Technically, a pound a month now is worth a lot less than it was 10 years ago.
It's 50p a month now to what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's created all kinds of pressure in markets.
Yeah.
It's created pressure in futures markets, created pressure for our businesses, it's created pressure for storage. There's a lot in agriculture which, if you look on too long a term, you can lose the meaning of actually what it is you're trying to say.
Yeah.
So I believe prices are now more about 140 than the 110 mark.
Yeah.
And with inflation, that's right. It should be how.
Yeah, well, it should be. It should be. It needs to be there, doesn't it?
It needs to be. And we can't have agriculture producing below the cost of production.
No, no.
Especially avoiding the B word. But whatever may happen with agricultural support payments, it's going to need to be more business orientated as a whole for not only the producing, but also the marketing and selling.
After the B word, from a market intelligent point of view, who chooses the direction of information? How do you get your information, and who chooses the direction the information comes from?
We choose our information from a range of sources. There's multiple sources around the world depending where we look. The USDA are a great one, but they're not by any means the sole information provider. There's the Australian Abares, there's multiple organisations for South America, for Ukraine, for France, for Europe as a whole. There's a lot of information, and I think what our job really in market specialists is to do is to collate all this information and put it out in a succinct way to Levy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of noise, and I view our job as to filter through the noise and put out what is actually meaningful. You know, we can spend hours a day reading reports and going through them where no farmer has the time,
no
patience, nor want to spend every day reading through technical reports, through spreadsheets of numbers, and to collate that world view. I think that's what our job is to cut through the noise of the market department and provide a succinct and impartial view of the world.
And where do you see the AHDB market intelligence role in the next 10 years? I think it's quite vital myself, but where do you see it as in the marketplace?
I hope that we're vital, and I hope that we're used across multiple sectors as an informal, if not sense check for people. We do provide this information, we provide our own market view, which cross sectors is different. If you take potatoes, for instance, with our potato weekly prices, we hope they're used as a sense check for people operating in the free buy market. We act as a market failure organisation, providing information where it might otherwise be lacking.
Yeah.
And in terms of cereals, I do think marketing of cereals will become much more important over the next few years, as agriculture has to become profitable and farm business structure might have to change slightly. It's all well and good trying to cut your costs and trying to improve your margins on fields, but if you can make another £10 a tonne for your wheat every year through effective marketing, that job's already made a lot easier for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's where people will need to change. There's a lot of strategies which have worked for people in the past, which have been good for some years, where you may sell a third. But is that necessarily right, and is that necessarily creating enough of a margin, and is that effective grain marketing for business?
Well, we seem to rely on spikes, don't we? And the spike, if you can catch a spike, it makes a huge difference to your bottom line.
Yep.
If you're in a pool, people try and get me to sell in pools. And I've tried a little bit this year, and I'm nervous of the fact that I've done it anyway. But when you're in a pool, you don't get a spike, so you're almost a happy medium person all the time. Whereas juggling the market to make use of the spikes.
I think what we have to work out as a farm business is what is a good price.
Yeah.
And until people can define what a good price is, it's difficult to know how to market.
Yeah.
Until you know your cost of production and what is profit, how do you know it's a good price to sell at?
Yes.
Everyone always wants more.
Yeah.
At what point is that enough?
Yeah.
Well, when
corn is £190 a tonne, a farmer will wait for £200.
Exactly. And yet they may be making £40-50 a tonne on that.
Yes.
And that's a good price.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll want more. It's defining when that price is a good price, which I think is a needed shift in the industry, and hopefully things like the Farm Bench Programme enables growers in order to get a better handle on their costs. It's an industry of lots of different inputs, which is hard to quantify. But hopefully, through the services we offer, people are able to have a better handle on their costs. And once you've got your costs, you then know your margins. You then know when to sell.
Yeah, yeah. I'm quite a fan of Farm Bench. It's if you don't know, how can you guess? Really, it's unbelievable. Really, that people wouldn't know their costs. Mm.
And I think in terms of marketing, knowing your costs is pretty essential. If you were to take an option on futures, selling your grain. Where would you know at what point you want to have your option, and as to whether that's worth doing or not without knowing your initial cost basis?
Yeah.
Personally, I think options are underused, and I think there's room with us as market specialists in order to highlight and explain and inform about their use for agriculture and selling your grain. I think there'd be a great way for a lot of businesses in order to insure the price of their grain. It's not an insurance, but it works very similarly. You pay a risk premium to set a minimum price.
Yeah. Yeah.
And without knowing your costs, where do you know if that premium's
enough to cover? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too right. So, a while ago, you did a video on market projections. Then, where do you see the market projection for this next 12 months? It was undersupply over the past 2 years, supposedly. So, where do you see it for this next 12 months?
These next 12 months are likely to return us to a net export position. For wheat, certainly, we've had an increase in the area. With average yields, we were discussing earlier, variable yields, we're certainly probably not going to be a high-yielding year, but we're certainly probably going to be an average-yielding year.
Yeah.
Which would see us roughly at or slightly above that 15 million tonne mark for wheat. We will need to export. We will need to be export competitive. And if you look at our import and export sort of ceiling of where UK prices need to sit, we're going to need to sit slightly more towards our export competitive level in that sort of global matrix of prices. And again, with barley, we could be looking at a 7 million tonne plus barley crop. Again, we will need to be export competitive on that. So it's a bit of a swap, a bit of a reverse in our market sentiment. And without wanting to focus too much on Brexit and the uncertainty,
you used the B word.
I did use
the
B word. Scratch that. Can't believe it. Well, we can't avoid it. We can't avoid it. It's a year where we're going to be in surplus, need to export.
Yeah.
And there's big risks with our biggest trading partner.
So going on from export and trading partners, the Chinese have just killed 20% of their pigs, supposedly, which apparently is the word I use, is as many pigs as there are in Europe and America put together. Is that right? Does that affect Does that affect the trade in corn?
It affects the trade in soybeans a lot.
Yeah.
I know the term soybeans and talking about soybeans isn't an attractive topic to talk about for UK agriculture. It seems one step removed, which it is. But if we're talking about oilseeds and we're talking about oilseed rape, we can't ignore soybeans.
No.
That is why, although the UK is going to be in deficit for oilseed rape in 1920 and Europe is as well, prices haven't gone up as much as on the face of it you think they might be in isolation. But it is going to affect the demand for soybeans in China, African swine flu fever. We've had massive stocks in the States of soybeans, highest ever. And production as well is going to be reasonable again in the States. There's a lot of soybeans in the world. There's a lot of soybeans in South America, which has really depressed that entire oilseed complex.
Particularly with the wet maize planting as well they've had over there. We'll push them into a June plant soybean, which will exacerbate the problem, I think, won't it?
It will indeed, which is why there's a huge amount of soybeans. It's adding a lot of pressure to the global oilseed complex, which is causing an impact.
Do you think that it makes oilseed production in the UK untenable just at the moment, while that glut added to the flea beetle problems that we're getting?
I don't think it does. I think it's still an attractive crop where you're not suffering with too much pest problems. I think if you look at your gross margins and you look at the return you can get from oilseed rape as a break crop, it's still fairly competitive against other options. It's a crop which is needed in domestically. Our demand is about 2 million tonnes, and this year we're probably looking at more about 1.7 million tonne production. It's a crop that's needed, it's a crop that's wanted, and as a break crop it does actually provide quite a good return. There's been a lot of pest problems this year. Everyone will have their own ways of managing this, although I do feel that possibly the dry autumn that we had led to a bit of a problem with establishment. And it's been a double whammy of pest problems of cabbage stem flea beetle and pigeons in a slow establishment, which I think has led to problems this year. I know there's a lot of sentiment and a lot of feeling that people don't necessarily want to plant oilseed rape again next year, but I think when it comes down to money and gross margins and other viable alternatives, oilseed rape's got to feature.
So going on from the B word, and we've used it once, we won't use it again, sorry Eleanor, with Mr. Trump and his trade deal, that he's desperate to get things into the country, how do you think that will affect us with them pushing soy, pushing GM, pushing foreign wares into this country based on a trade deal of no tariff?
On the deal of no tariff, I think the impacts for UK primary producers, cereals and oilseeds, could be somewhat limited. We already import soybeans. We already import meal. I don't think there's too much more scope or demand to have a huge amount more of these primary grains imported. We certainly don't need feed bases. And if you look at milling wheat, we already bring in milling wheat from Canada.
Yeah.
I see these import options for primary cereals and oilseed producer as possibly far less of a threat than it would be maybe for the livestock side. Going on primary producer side, I don't think there'd be a huge pressure that would come to bear on UK markets. We already operate in a global marketplace. We already trade extensively with Europe throughout the Black Sea. There's already that trade going on.
Yeah. So from a positive point of view, if we're going to sort of look for positives in agriculture and look for positives in marketing, where do you see the positives for UK marketing, UK cereals, UK produce over the next 5-10 years?
UK produce does have a great reputation around the world. I do feel, from the cereal side, that we shouldn't focus on the export market. I think we ought to focus on the domestic. I think growers need to look at their own domestic market and grow for the UK first.
Yeah.
Look where you are in the country, look where your centres of demand are, look at your basis, where is your local mill, where are you growing for?
Yeah.
And focus on that more over the next few years. Focus on that value added, on those niche products possibly. Should there be a marketplace for them? I think that's where we need to focus and be proud and do that well before we necessarily start focusing on the export market from the cereals and oilseed producer side.
Yeah.
And then I think we need the livestock sector, we need the other post-farm organisations to then promote and sell their produce, beer sales, malt, livestock sales. I think these are where the UK has a great reputation around the world to promote the exports. And as the cereals and oilseed industry, we feed into that. We don't necessarily want to lead on this as a base set of group four,
well,
four feed wheats.
I was lucky enough to come and speak at the HDB and find a very enthusiastic group of people. It's lovely to have so much enthusiasm for agriculture and for the job that they're doing. Hmm. How do you keep that enthusiasm going in an industry that is full of grey-haired old men. You can look at a cattle market and there's a lot of grey hair leaning over the fence, mine included. How do you see enthusiasm? How do you push enthusiasm through UK agriculture to promote UK produce and promote UK farming as a whole?
I think we've looked at it in various ways as to how VHDB operates within farming. I think the Monitor Farm programme is great. We get out a lot more. We see a lot more people out and about.
Yeah.
We're getting more personal in our approach and more accountable as well, which is important.
Yeah.
And I think through being accountable and being personal and being out in the field more, I think that's how we engage more with Levy, and that's how us as an organisation like being. We like feedback.
Yeah.
We're not a nameless, faceless group of people in a glass palace.
No.
We do.
No.
We exist. We're relatively normal-ish.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And we love that engagement, and it's something that we like to do more and have more of, which is slightly cool to industry, that if you're not engaged or you think there should be something we're doing we should do better or do more of, then let us know.
Yeah.
We exist purely to serve Levy, and Levy ought to engage fully.
Exactly. Well, we were chatting earlier and I mentioned the buffet arrangement, and I feel the AHDB for me is a buffet. You've paid the ticket and it's up to you to go and take your plate up to the counter, really, because there's plenty there to eat, isn't there? There's a plethora of knowledge in there.
There's a huge amount of services which should become easier to access soon. We were talking earlier about the changes in the organisation, and shortly we'll be going to a new website platform where hopefully everything will be easy to access, more accessible, more obvious to highlight what we do and where it is. Which I think would be a great change moving forward, especially as we move from this multiple sectors to coming together as VAHDB, to have these different websites which will now look all the same and allow information transfer much easier and look better and easier to navigate, I think should help people navigate and learn what it is we actually do.
Yeah, well, I think from a levy payer's point of view, there's lots of people that are grumpy and say, well, where's my levy being spent, and why am I paying these people to do these things? I never see them. Well, they're there. You just need to pick up the phone or get involved. Get involved is the key to it.
Get involved. We're always happy to pick up the phone.
Yeah, I mean, from
my phone number's quite clearly on the website and everything I publish. Yeah, I'm not scared of having people call up. I have no intention of hiding away or.
No, well, and I think everybody in the organisation has that view. It's a really great organisation, if only people would make the most of it rather than moan about it. Because at the moment I feel that agriculture needs help, it needs a leader, it needs a body to guide it through these choppy waters, and maybe the AHDB is that body, really. You're there for us, aren't you?
We are there for you, and I'd like to think we are that impartial organisation which you can turn to for information.
Yeah.
Especially from the market side, where I work, it's that impartial view, which I think is a valuable aspect which we provide.
Many thanks to Martin and Peter for their informative conversation there. All of the information discussed in this episode can be found by going to ahdb.org.uk, and the links to specific sections of the website can be found in the notes section of this podcast. The next AHDB podcast will be talking about pigs in the arable rotation. We'll hear how producers and landlords can work together to benefit not only each other, but the environment as well. Until then, thank you for listening.